Hello, and welcome to What's Killing My Kale. This podcast is a production of the University of Minnesota Extension, hosted by Extension educators Annie Claude and Natalie Hoytel.
In each episode, we interview a farmer, researcher, or educator about a timely topic around growing fruit and vegetable crops in Minnesota. Usually we talk about pests, but sometimes we venture into other important issues of the moment.
Today, I'm here talking to Becky Weeps. Becky and I know each other from grad school. We both got our master's in horticulture at Penn State, and so that's where we met. And Becky, your project was on apples, right?
Yeah, it was. I worked specifically with artificial spur extinction, which is a type of crop load management in apples.
Awesome. And so I wanted to talk to you today because crop management is such an important topic. We're just getting to the tail end of when growers can do traditional crop management for the summer, because typically we want to do crop management within a month of the peak of bloom, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You really want to get all of your crop load management done before June drop, which happens a little bit later in the upper Midwest. But generally we think of that as when fruitlets reach about 20 to 30 millimeters in diameter. So they're pretty big. And after that, the tree will do some of its own crop load management, but you're also not going to see the same return on your labor investment.
Okay. So let's just start. Could you tell us a little bit about, first, what is crop management? And then could you talk a little bit about what you did in your master's project to research this?
Yeah, absolutely. So crop load management is the manipulation of the number of fruit that are on a tree. And this is really important because apples have a tendency to set, not every variety, but most varieties have a tendency to set a lot of fruit early in the season. And because of this, at the end of the season, the fruit will be smaller. And so generally, when we think about crop load management and manipulating the number of fruit on their trees, there are things you can do to encourage the number of fruit on a tree, like having pollination options and things like that. But generally speaking, it's a lot easier to take fruit off of a tree than to put them on. And so generally, when we're talking about crop load management, we're talking about decreasing the number of fruit on a tree during those heavy seasons, so we don't have this fluctuation that we refer to as biennality. And there's a lot of different reasons that people do it, but the primary reason, aside from, well, the primary reason is to minimize that fluctuation in trees that fluctuate a lot, because it's good to have a regular crop of high quality apples. And the second reason is the quality of the apples. When you take a lot of the extra fruit off, at the end of the season, you're going to see bigger fruit, you're going to see better coloration of the fruit, and you're going to see faster ripening, which means higher sugar content and slightly earlier harvest times, which is always desirable as a grower. Right.
So I see a lot of growers in Minnesota who are doing crop load management to some extent. I know some who have not started doing this. And the growers that I see using crop load management are using a variety of different techniques. Some are using chemical thinners, some are hand thinning trees, and some are doing that to a higher or a lesser degree. Another thing that I saw last fall going around to orchards, some orchards had a lot of dropped apples. Now, is this a result of the type of crop load management they were either doing or not doing?
It really depends. So if a person is going through and hand thinning a little bit later in that time period that we have to work with before June drop, they'll drop the apples right on the ground, and you can see dropped apples because of that. You also might be seeing a lot of apples on the ground because they didn't do crop load management and they trusted the trees to regulate themselves, and a lot of trees will. In late June or early July, the trees will kind of self-regulate and they'll drop the fruit that they don't have the ability to sustain until the end of the season. And this is a good thing because it means the tree's not gonna overexert themselves in terms of the carbohydrate resources that they have, but usually they're gonna drop enough fruit, they're gonna drop the bare minimum of fruit, right? Because you have to think about apple trees from the perspective, apples are potential offspring, and based on, you know, evolution and survival, the more offspring you have, the better, generally. So A lot of the trees will only drop enough so that they're able to survive through the season and like ripen what they have, but they're not going to be good quality. The apples are still going to be smaller. They're still going to ripen a little bit slower. So you'll see dropped apples on the ground because the tree has done it or because the people have done it. And depending on when they came off of the tree, they'll be different size. It also means at the end of the season, you'll see different impacts.
Okay, great. So crop load management is really important for fruit quality and for the health of the tree, both of those factors, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. And I know Honeycrisp is one of those varieties that we really, obviously we grow a lot of in Minnesota and we have issues with biennality in that variety. Can you just talk about what we mean by biennality?
Yes, absolutely. I'm sorry if I didn't spell that out. So biennality is the natural fluctuation of the apple tree and the amount of fruit that it produces. And essentially what it means is that in one season, your tree is going to produce a lot of apples and they're going to use up a lot of their stored carbon. So in the next and following season, they're going to produce a lot less apples. Some of them will produce almost none in alternating years. So part of why we do crop load management is to decrease those heavy years to try to balance it out so that every year you're getting high quality apples. And you're absolutely right. Honeycrisp is very, very strong biennially. And it can be a real struggle to get the crop low enough that the fruit is good sized, but not so low, which you have in some of the years where the fruit is huge and it's really not, it doesn't store very well when it gets that big.
Oh, okay. Okay. And, you know, sometimes I also get pictures sent to me or questions over email from home gardeners. So if there are any home gardeners listening who have apple trees, a question that I get a lot is, why did my Honeycrisp apple tree have a huge crop last year and almost no crop this year? And so that would be an example of biennality and one major reason why that could be happening.
Absolutely. Yes.
So we talked about this earlier, but just to reiterate, can you talk about when thinning typically happens during the growing season?
Absolutely, yeah. So thinning can happen really at any time in the growing season. There's nothing stopping you from going out and taking fruit off of your tree at any point in time. But the time period when you're going to see the greatest returns is earlier in the season. There's been a lot of studies looking at how timing and end of season quality are related, and size and return bloom in the following season, which is that biennality we were talking about, are especially correlated with early thinning. So we try to do all of our thinning before June drop, before the tree naturally drops a lot of its crop. And the earlier in the season you can do it, the better. Usually we go based on size of the fruit rather than days. So when you go out and look at your fruitlets, depending on where you are in the country, a lot of people have started doing bloom thinning, which is done using lime sulfur typically. So you're actually doing that before there's even fruit on the tree, and you're manipulating the number of apples that are, the number of flowers, excuse me, that are left to be pollinated. But after that stage, when you start to get into the other forms of chemical thinning, you're going to get into hormonal thinners, and those are usually done when the fruitlets are about 10 to 12 millimeters in diameter.
Okay.
After that, you get into the time period when hand thinning and rescue thinning happen, and that's usually 20 to 30 millimeters in diameter. So it's hard to set a day length because it's so variable depending on the weather.
Mm-hmm. Especially this year, we've had such fluctuating temperatures. It has been so cold in May, and then our first week of June, it was pretty hot. And this week, you know, it's June 21st today. This week has been really cool on average, below our average June temperatures. So that does make it hard for us to predict the best timing for thinning and when it's too late to go in there and thin. So yeah, so I would just say growers would really need to just go out to their own orchard, measure fruit size, and figure out what the most appropriate thinning technique would be if they haven't already gone out and done that. But your research during your master's focused on non-chemical thinning options. And this is exciting to me because we do have a lot of organic growers in Minnesota who I think would be very interested in non-chemical options for thinning. And so I would love for you to talk about what this research was and what some of those options for non-chemical thinning are, other than obviously your traditional hand thinning.
Yeah. So non-chemical thinning is relatively limited, and we generally divide it into mechanical and manual thinning, which manual is just a fancy word for hand thinning, obviously. And my research focused on artificial spur extinction, which is a early season type of hand thinning. and is very popular in Australia and New Zealand. Was originally developed in France. Is done early in the season. So in Australia and New Zealand, they do it at bloom, right at bloom. So before any fruit is set. We did ours while the trees were still dormant because that's when we're likely to have labor resources available in the U.S. So artificial spur extinction is a technique that came out of France, and it was designed originally to decrease the potential crop load of the tree. And we do this by going in and breaking out spurs in the tree. The industry standard is to measure the branch size of the branch and then leave a certain number of buds on that branch. Buds and spurs in this case are synonymous. Some people have much more tight definitions of spurs, but for this case, we view them as all the same. And the industry standard is to leave 6 buds per centimeter squared of limb cross-sectional area. And this has mostly been done, so the technique was originally used on centrifugal trees, which are semi-dwarf trees that have permanent scaffold branches at the bottom, so which is different than our tall spindle trees, which have no permanent scaffolds and everything is renewed when it gets to a certain size. But this technique has been used on tall spindle trees, especially in New Zealand and Australia, and it's been very, very effective for them.
Okay.
So for somebody like an organic grower or somebody who has a small acreage, going out to your trees and breaking out some of those buds is a really great tool to decrease your hand thinning you're going to have to do later. And it also is a very effective way to manage crop load in a conservative way. So if you're going out and you're breaking off a certain number of buds with the mentality that you're going to have to come back and remove fruit later, this isn't your only thinning technique. You're going to have to come back and do a second thin. It can be a really good tool for decreasing crop load a little bit. It also is really great because if you come in when the tree is dormant and you break out some of those buds and then you get a frost at bloom time, you've still left a decent amount of fruit on this tree, and therefore you're still going to get some fruit in the season. You have a slightly better chance of surviving. Whereas if you go in and you break out the vast majority of these buds, then you're really going to struggle with surviving any potential things that happen, which, as we all know, is almost every season something unpredictable happens.
Right.
So that's the basis of the technique, is to go in and remove buds or blossom clusters early in the season as a means of decreasing potential crop load later in the season.
So I think, I see a lot of orchards in Minnesota that are on dwarf rootstocks, maybe a B9, and they'll plant the trees, say, 6 feet apart. So we're not talking super high density plantings here, but they do have permanent scaffolds on those trees. So I'm just wondering if you could give us a ballpark. I know you talked about deciding how many buds to remove based on the diameter of the trunk, right?
Yeah.
Could you try to give us kind of a ballpark of, in that scenario, what percentage of buds you would expect to be removing from the tree?
Percentage is a little bit hard because, as we talked about, it fluctuates from year to year. A better way to do it is if you don't want to go out and measure all of your branches, because that is very time consuming. The other thing that you can do is the way that people do their general hand thinning is they space out their fruit every, depending on who you ask, usually every 5 to 7 inches is what I'm familiar with. So your fruit, you have single fruit at those intervals. The other thing to think about is on those slightly larger trees with the bigger spacings, the middle of that tree doesn't get good light exposure. So it's a good practice, and that's what centrifugal trees, historically, this technique was originally developed on centrifugal trees, and they went in and they actually took all of the buds out of the center of the canopy. And that removes those potentially lower quality fruit, and it improves the light environment within the canopy.
Okay. And they would just leave the fruit towards the outside?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So this is something where, growers in Minnesota, I could see some growers trying this practice out on part of their orchard experimentally and seeing how it goes, because then you as the grower have an opportunity to see how it worked on your orchard, and then you could decide next year, do I want to do this again, or do I want to go back to more of a traditional thinner? Do I want to go back to not thinning at all? And then you would have this option too of seeing, well, what is the percentage that works for me before, or what is the, you know, the spacing of apples that I want to leave? And they could adjust those numbers based on what happened the previous years.
I think that's a fantastic idea. Absolutely. Because like with everything in apples, variety makes a big difference and environment makes a big difference.
Yep.
So you might try this technique on your Honeycrisp, and you might try it on Sweet Tango, and you might try it on Harrelson, and they all might respond differently. Mm-hmm. So it's always good to try a few and see how it works in your specific situation.
Right. And so for anybody interested in trying this, you would want to compare it. I would say compare it to the thinning techniques that you have previously been using, but you also might want to compare it to a situation where you're not thinning. So you have your positive and negative controls, as we call them, to compare a new technique to.
Absolutely. The mechanical thinning that we talk about a lot is that we have been using or attempted to use is the Darwin string thinner, which essentially looks like a long tubular weed whacker that you attach to your tractor. If you can picture that. And essentially, yeah. So in Europe, this is actually a pretty common form of crop load management, because they have different regulations on what chemicals they can and cannot use on their trees. There was a couple of studies done out of Pennsylvania using the Darwin string thinner. And mostly what they found was that when they used it on fruitlets, when the fruit are small in size, probably 15 millimeters, I think is the size they worked on. They found that it caused a lot of damage to the spur leaves, which are those first leaves that open up on the tree, and they're the initial source of carbohydrates for the fruit in that cluster. And because of that, even when they decreased crop load, they didn't see a great return on fruit size at the end of the season, because they had a limit to their early season carbohydrate sources.
Right.
The other thing that they looked at doing it with, the other time they looked at applying string thinners to the trees was to do the artificial spur extinction that I did my project on. And they actually found a similar thing. When they got the level of the string thinner up to where it was removing enough spurs from the tree, they had a lot of damage to the woody tissues. And the trees were stressed enough that they didn't return, they didn't improve fruit quality at the end of the season.
Okay.
That being said, this technique has been really popular in Europe, and I'm not sure if it's got to do with the weather differences that we have between here and there, or if it's the technique. There's some hope in Pennsylvania that if we find a different end effector, so not strings on the string thinner, some sort of a brush or something that won't cause so much damage to the trees, that we could make this an effective tool, because it has a lot of potential. You can do a lot of trees really quickly. And actually we use it very frequently on the peach trees, because they can withstand any of the damage to them. Their blooms come right off and they're totally fine.
Okay.
So that's the mechanized side of things. There's people have looked historically at a lot of different mechanized thinning techniques, shaking, similar to what you do in tart cherry trees, or clubbing, or lots of different things. And most of it has been largely found to be not worth the time because of the damage it causes to the trees. Okay. The other side of that is manual thinning. And obviously you're familiar with the typical hand thinning that you do a little bit later in the season.
All right, so let's pretend that it's not June 21st today. Let's pretend it's the end of April, and we're having a conversation to prepare growers for the season and give some recommendations on thinning. So if it were the end of April and people are looking towards potentially thinning during bloom and using thinners during the beginning of the growing season, you mentioned lime sulfur during bloom, correct?
Yes, and I'm not sure. So the thing with lime sulfur is that it's not registered for use for thinning in most states still. Right. It's been registered out west, and now just over the last year or so, it's gotten registration for thinning in New York and Pennsylvania, and I think in Maryland. But some of the East Coast states have gotten registration for it over the last couple of years. I don't know if it's registered for use in the Midwest, which
if
means
it's for, that would be a nice tool for organic growers.
Yes. Oh God, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the few tools available to organic growers. There's a lot of the hormonal tools aren't, for obvious reasons, are not considered organic. And there was some talk about lime sulfur not being organic, but I don't think that's gone anywhere.
Right. Now, lime sulfur, just for anyone who's listening who is an organic grower, you still have to use a lot of precautions when applying lime sulfur. It's not one of those products that growers enjoy applying or enjoy cleaning out of the tanks, because it is more challenging to clean out of that tank. It's pretty gunky. So just if anybody's considering doing that, just read the label and make sure you are using that product safely.
Yeah. Well, and one of the other drawbacks to lime sulfur is that people often tank mix it with oil. And a lot of people feel that it works best when tank mixed with fish oil. And lime sulfur does not smell good. And then mixing it with fish oil makes it so much worse.
Yeah.
But it's a very effective thinner when you use it correctly.
And then can you just go over what some of the thinner products are for after petal fall?
Here we go. Yes. So NAA, NAD, and 6BA are the three most common growth regulator thinners. And NAA and NAD are types of auxins, which are plant hormones. And 6BA is a cytokinin, which is also a type of plant hormone. But their action is different within the fruit.
Yeah, different modes of action, right?
Yes, thank you. That's the word I was trying to think of. And then the other thing that you'll see is there's some types of kind of other pesticides that also happen to have thinning actions. People use them that way. Carbaryl has been a really popular chemical thinner for a long time, or something that people will mix along with hormonal thinners. But there's been, so the EU banned carbaryl as a thinner because it's an insecticide, and so it has potentially negative impacts on pollinators because you're spraying it early in the season.
Right.
And now Whole Foods also banned it, and there's always potential that it's going to go away.
A lot of growers are using those auxin plant growth regulator hormone thinners as their strategy for thinning. I'm not sure how common this is in Minnesota. You know, I think a lot of the larger growers are using this, but for newer growers who maybe are planting an acre of trees as an accompaniment to their CSA or to their farmer's market, they might not be familiar with these technologies yet. So we do have a lot of resources that are available to us online for growers who are interested in learning more about those products. It's important to read the label, because if you read the label, they'll give recommendations on the concentrations that you're supposed to use for those products and how much thinning to actually expect. Cornell has really good information on these products as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think what I'll do is at the end just list a few different resources that people can Google in order to find those. So can you just reiterate again then, let's say a grower goes out today, looks at their fruit, it's about 15 millimeters. What kind of thinning would you recommend them do at that point in time?
At that point in time, I would probably recommend looking at some of the hormonal thinners. You're just on the outside, excuse me, you're just on the outside of when a lot of the hormonal thinners that people use are going to be effective. And unfortunately, the other thing you have to take into consideration is your weather. So a lot of growers who rely heavily on chemical thinning also rely very heavily on the Cornell carbon balance model. And
what's that?
The carbon balance model is a computer model designed by a group of scientists out of Cornell a number of years ago. And it's been improved over time, but essentially what it does is it takes into consideration the weather in your area and the variety of apple that you're working with. And it tells you very, very roughly how the tree is going to respond to chemical thinners. Now this is, it's not 100% guarantee, obviously. Models are built on a variety of parameters, and they change, right? Depending on where you're using. This is, developed in New York. You guys are in Minnesota. It's very hard to predict, but it's a really good tool for giving you a rough idea of how your trees will respond to a chemical thinner, because essentially what it takes into consideration is the available carbohydrate resources based on the sunlight availability, and then how much the tree is going to be utilizing based on temperatures and a number of other factors. And then it tells you whether the tree is in a deficit, it's using more carbon than it's absorbing, or if the tree is in a surplus, which means that it is absorbing more carbon than it's using, and stressed out trees drop more fruit. So when the tree is in deficit for a few days is when you're going to have the greatest impact by your chemical thinners.
Okay.
So if you've been having a cool week this week and you had a grower whose fruit were at 15 millimeters in diameter, the fact that those fruit are a little bit bigger and the fact that you have a cool week, so the tree is probably has a surplus of carbohydrates, means they most likely wouldn't respond well to chemical thinners now. So it might be wasted money to go out there and spray your trees.
That's really good to know, especially for us in our conditions right now.
Absolutely.
So if that's the case, what would you use as a secondary solution?
Honestly, at this point in the season, your main option is going to be hand thinning. And that is really a struggle because it's a lot of labor. But the rescue thinners that are available aren't effective until the fruit are a little bit bigger. So you could wait, I suppose, and come in with the Ethifon is the one that I'm the most familiar with, which is an ethylene precursor. And when you spray it on the trees, it develops into ethylene, stresses the trees, and they drop some fruit. But it is very unpredictable. So there's a lot of growers that won't even touch it because it can be very unpredictable. That's kind of a bad way to word that.
Would the unpredictability mean basically you don't know what percentage of fruit is going to drop?
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of the hormonal thinners, a lot of the chemical thinners in general are pretty unpredictable. Which is part of why a lot of the growers, when they've had the option, have switched over to doing the bloom thinning because that uses lime sulfur. And I think it's Virginia Tech, has come out with a model that basically looks at how many flowers you have on the tree and the length of the styles, which allows you to predict pollen tube growth, which is really cool. And they have released this model that allows you to say, okay, there's this many flowers open on the tree. If I wait this many days after those open, and then I spray the tree and kill all the flowers, those flowers will have already been pollinated. Therefore, I'll have this much remaining on my tree. And it's so far been very, very accurate as far as all the studies that I have seen. But when it comes to the chemical thinners and the rescue, so the hormonal thinners that you use in the middle of the season and then the rescue thinners at the end of the season,
End of the season meaning?
Sorry, I shouldn't say end of the season. I should say end of the thinning period, like the crop load management period that we focus on, which is June.
Right.
30 millimeters. They're very unpredictable. So, which is another thing that we talk about a lot with thinning. This is kind of a segue, but
sure.
what we really put a lot of emphasis on, all the people that I've ever worked with, is what my advisor called the nibble approach, which is to go out. Which is to understand that you're probably going to have to crop thin frequently, you know, spraying a little bit a number of times so that you can see how your tree reacts and then make your decisions based on that. Because you don't want to risk overthinning, right? You want to get a good crop off of these trees so you can make money. That's obviously the end goal, unless you're a homeowner. And then you just want to have fruit because, you know, you have a tree. You want to have fruit off of it.
Yeah.
So at this point in the season, you're kind of past that nibble approach. You're kind of entering the stage where if you've got the labor resources or a lower number of trees, hand thinning is really your main option.
Okay. All right. So then the question is, if I were a grower, is it feasible for me labor-wise to go out and hand thin at this point in the season? And then the question would be, how many fruit do I thin? Right. So, and I know that some growers in the state are still using standard size trees or semi-dwarf trees. And at that point, I think going and hand thinning those trees would take significantly more labor and time than if growers are growing on, say, a tall spindle system or at least a high density dwarf tree system.
Yeah, you're completely correct. Honestly, I would say that at this point in the season, it's unless someone for some reason has tons of extra labor resources, which generally people don't, it's really not feasible for people to expect to go out there and hand thin all their trees right now. Especially, you're completely right, especially on standard trees. They are beasts to get around. And predicting the number of fruit to leave on them is really difficult. So if you had tall spindle trees, you could potentially go in and hand thin them just because you're not fighting through as much of the canopy. The trees are a little bit easier to predict, things like that. But honestly, if you have a lot of trees at this point, what I would say is to just allow the fruit to drop naturally, and work based on that.
Okay.
If you've got Honeycrisp at this point, if you're a commercial grower of Honeycrisp at this point, you've probably done your crop load management by now, I would imagine. If you're a commercial Honeycrisp is the type of variety, it's kind of the exception to the rule for a lot of things. So for Honeycrisp specifically, or for other really high value varieties that have a strong biennial tendency, it's worth it to go out there and hand thin now. Even if you're fighting through big trees, even if you've got to find extra labor resources, it's your fruit are still going to be small enough that you're going to see a return, and you're going to see that return next year when you get a good return bloom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that one, you're just saying, you know, I'm just reiterating, the biennality is so strong in that one that if you don't go out and hand thin now, you are going to have issues with crop load next year.
Yes, absolutely. That and the fact that Honeycrisp is a much higher value fruit. So you're going to get a better return at the end of the season. So you can kind of spend a little bit more up front, you know, in terms of your labor costs. It's not ever enjoyable, but it's worth it for that variety. But that being said, Sweet Tango and your First Kiss apple are both very high value varieties, which potentially means that even though you're not worried about return bloom, that slight increase in size you might see this year might make it worthwhile for you to go out and do some crop load management too, especially if your trees are really heavy.
Okay. Well, Becky, thank you so much for talking to us today. I really appreciate your expertise on thinning, and I think a lot of apple growers in the state, whether they're organic or more conventional growers, can get a lot of really useful information and just ideas to think about based on this. So I appreciate it. And again, I think we'll play this episode now, and then I'm going to replay it in the winter for people thinking about their thinning and pruning strategies for the upcoming season.
That sounds so great. It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for giving me a call.
All right. Thanks.